Welcome again. Now for the, should I say, the serious part. And also welcome to all of those who listen to this on the audio webcast. We will have about 1.5 hours from now, having first a short presentation and then time for Q&A. So let me start then with the first part, which is covering, yeah, we have the safe harbor statement. You know that by heart, as I do, so we don't have to read it to each other. With the operational performance, it says Q4 2010, obviously also including then the full year. But before going into that, I would say today is different. It's different for us, at least, and you should also get that feeling, because it's not just an ordinary quarter which we finish, it's not just an ordinary year which we finish, it is also a period which we finish. It's a period Vision 2010 and accelerated Vision 2010, and it's even a longer period, closing off with a longer-term portfolio transformation of DSM and starting a new era, an era of growth, which we have announced in September last year as the new strategy, DSM in Motion, Driving Focused Growth. And also to mark this new era, we also today published and launched our new DSM logo, which is clearly different and is a sign of this new era. Now we have all seen it, you have all been introduced to it, and you will get used to it, and I guess it's a sign which is easy to remember. So more than just the finishing of a quarter, more than just finishing of a year, really finishing of a period and starting a new one. But to finish the period, just the highlights of quarter four and also fiscal year, calendar year 2010. We completed Vision 2010 successfully. We start a new era of growth. And we completed the fiscal year and the calendar year and the quarter with a good quarter, a strong quarter, quarter four 2010, slightly above our expectations in the outlook statement earlier in the quarter three press release, in line with or even identical total result with quarter three. And clearly above quarter four 2009. Full year operating profit, 752 million. That is 74% more than the year before, which of course was a year of an economic downturn, a crisis year. And if we go back a year from where we stand today, a year ago we still had a lot of uncertainty in our discussions. How will 2010 look like? Will we have a double dip? What will it be? Will it be a continuation of crisis? Will it be continuation at low levels? And that was the mood only 12 months ago. And if we look back now to the year 2010, it's really different. We have seen an economic upswing of quite some size and quite some speed, and uninterrupted. And that is what we see in the results. We had very good performance in our life sciences businesses, driven by nutrition, obviously. Pharma, we cannot be satisfied, and we are working on it. We have significant improvements in the material sciences, which of course was hit much harder in the economic downturn in 2008 and 9. And based on all of that and the continued cash flow, which we achieved also in 2010, again 1.1 billion operating cash flow, driven again by the profitability on the one side, but also by very strict working capital management again. We are looking back at a successful year and also successful finishing of Vision 2010, and already very early, in fact, we started already before Christmas announcing the first big successes, the first big steps in the new strategy. And because of that, we also said we should increase the dividend already one step more than we announced in September, where we said it will be 130. So we now propose to the shareholders in April 135. For 2011, and we will come back in more detail on that, and hope most likely we'll have also some discussion later on the outlook statement. We have a very general outlook, as you know, from the first outlook of the year. We expect 2011 to be another strong year for DSM, on track to achieve our targets 2013. Now this for the highlights, we go through some numbers, and Feike will then do the second part and the third part about strategy, looking a little bit back and more important looking forward, and then also finishing with the outlook statement. The quarter four results and the fiscal year results, both on continuing operations, excluding exceptionals, but also including exceptionals, and for the full company, all numbers are very positive there. Good growth in the fourth quarter, but also in the year on the sales, on the top line, and also in the total CSM before exceptional items, including the discontinued operations, 9 billion euro sales. So quite a significant improvement. We were below 8 billion the year before. And of course, that already is only for 5 months left, the agromelamine sales in there and the other divestments according to the period until closing. And at the end of the year, there was only one business classified as discontinued operations, and that is the Keltan part of the elastomers, which we announced for sale to LANXESS before Christmas. So that's the only one which is in the end of the year in discontinued operations and also obviously in the beginning of the new year until closing. Including exceptional items, of course, the sales don't change. The net profit is 507 million. That is 50% more or less than the year before. Also then on the earnings per share, it is €3 roughly versus €2 in the year earlier. Operating profit core business, and this is the DSM core business, is basically what it now is, the continuing operations. That is the four clusters. Base Chemicals and Materials was closed with the divestment of elastomers, and including the others, which is still including the innovation, also the pension on the old basis. If you look also back here a few years, it is by far the best year in history for the new portfolio of DSM, including the agromelamine, including the energy assets. 2008 was the best year, but now we look forward and we start from a new base, and this is clearly a stronger company overall than before. The net sales developments, I don't want to read all the numbers to you. Those are in the booklet which you have in front of you. I also on the conference call added a few numbers on a question, which was Q4 versus Q3, but this is Q4 versus year ago. Strong organic growth, volumes and pricing are shown separately, as you see, but also quite a significant exchange rate effect. On versus net sales growth 2010 versus 2009, full year, again, significant organic growth of 19% and an exchange rate effect of 4%. By the way, the often discussed also in the conference call this morning, Swiss franc effect, the negative impact on the results is the transactional effect. That is the transactional effect of having cost in Swiss franc in the nutrition business and selling mostly in US dollars. The translation effect of the same strong Swiss franc of the Swiss franc result into euros is actually positive, because the stronger the Swiss franc, you get more euros for it. But that does by far not compensate for the transactional impact. Nutrition alone in the fourth quarter, despite the strong Swiss franc, a quarter in line with a year ago. So we compensated the cost pressure which was caused by this misalignment or different alignment, strong Swiss franc versus dollar. We compensated that by volumes and also by cost management. The margin slightly lower because, as I said, the sales profit, of course, from the translation effect more than the profitability. And that is a reason why also the margin goes slightly down, but it is 22%. It is by far well in the range of which we set as the target for the next years to come. For the full year, again, the margin even slightly better, 20 basis points higher from 23.2 to 23.4. So we are perfectly in line with our own ambitions. And that's also basically what we say in the outlook going forward. So this is at the upper end of what we have set as the target for the next 5 years. Pharma, yes, a better quarter, as usual, one could say. It is lower than last year because last year benefited from the flu vaccine manufacturing we had in the fourth quarter and also a little bit in the first quarter 2010. But quarter four in pharma always has been the best quarter, so also in this year. But of course, we should not look at the 14.2 EBITDA margin. This is the quarter. What we need to bring up to standard and back to a level where we should be, and we said it should be 15 to 20 by 2015, is the margin for the full year, which is clearly unsatisfactory. But at least the fourth quarter delivered what we expected, and we finished the year for the whole cluster with a slight operating profit, as announced also in our outlook statement. Performance Materials, the strongest, of course, recovery, but also the most hurt in the downturn period. in the fourth quarter, slightly above last year, and also but below third quarter as usual, a seasonal low quarter with a very short December mainly. But also full year, you see it's almost triple profits on EBIT basis and almost double on an EBITDA basis with almost a 40% sales increase. So quite a significant recovery in this business. Polymer intermediates, this is of course the for the caprolactam part at least, the part which is also then used in engineering plastics, an astonishing year, I must say. I mean, this is just, I think, never have seen before. And probably you also not, enormous year, very strong growth, both volume and pricing. Volume, practically we cannot grow anymore because we have no more capacity until we build the second line in China as announced. So, but pricing is just, and margins are really, really very nice today. EBITDA margin for the year 16.4%, but of course for the strategy period we had said on average above 13. Now for the year we did it on average, and Feike will show that also later. We did not achieve it because of the 2 years, 2008 and 9. But this one is just absolutely astonishing and also very nice to see. Strong cash flow, as I said, 1.1 billion operating cash flow, good working capital development. We are now below 18%, which even 2 years ago we wouldn't have believed ourselves. And that is despite quite a high negative translation effect on working capital also because of currency. In the total working capital of roughly 1.5 billion, we have about 140 million negative translation effect. So on a comparable exchange rate basis, the working capital would have been almost 10% lower. But 17.9% is a very, very good result, and of course, we don't want to worsen it from here. In the balance sheet, when you look in the annual report, in the detail, in the cash flow statement, you will see slight different numbers. That is, I will just say it here because it can create some confusion. We decided with all the cash we have that we would also, to get a few more basis points interest income, invest some of our cash up to 500 million in up to 6 months deposits. And based on IFRS, over 3 months, it cannot be classified anymore as cash and cash equivalents. It has to be classified as something different with the short-term investments. And then in the cash flow statement, you see it as a minus 800 some million of investing activities. But don't get confused of that. It is just the cash which we have, which is a little bit longer invested. And net debt at the end of the year, and I said that already in the conference call, I think early November, I would expect it around zero, and it is actually, net debt is negative, so it's a net cash position of 100 million. Now, the dividend proposal I mentioned already in my introduction, and of course we repeat our intent to go at least to 150, of course, barring unforeseen circumstances, and if we are, and assuming we are on track to achieve our 2013 targets. So we continue with our strong dividend policy. And finally, two more slides on structure. We will change the reporting as indicated in September. We have the functional P&L now. You see it. You got a restatement last week, was it, Hans? And it is in the annual report. We will introduce the innovation cluster as of Q1 reporting, and as I said in the morning call, we will send you an email already with some pro forma restatements for your preparation work. That will be then official in Q1. And we also succeeded in changing the Dutch pension plan to the defined contribution plan, which we also announced as an intent in September, and we could really complete that end of the year. That also has that already mentioned technical accounting effect of 33 million, which we had in 2010 as a positive, which will disappear because of that change. But we are all happy with the change. It gives certainty, no volatility, and clear, much easier also predictability. And finally, we had a second press release today, the announcement of repurchasing about 5 million shares in the next weeks to come to hedge management and employee stock option plans, because with the improved share price, a lot more of our option series are in the money. So we had a lot of hedging, exercising of options already in the last weeks, and we have to build up our hedge position again. We will start with that tomorrow and will inform, as usual, the market once a week on the hedging activities. So total commitment there is roughly, based on yesterday's share price, 215 million. That's where I would like to finish and hand it over to Feike for the strategy part and the outlook.
Thank you, Wolf Dieter. Thank you all again being here. where are we? This slide. So that was the results Q4, like Rolf Dieter presented, and looking back towards the whole year 2010. Maybe take you in the next slide back to the whole transformation in the previous period, 2005-2010. As we sat with the logo and all the stuff, we close a period of transformation, focusing on growth. We cannot rub it in enough, not only externally, but tell you, but also internally. It means also stopping of reporting of the fifth cluster, base chemicals and materials. We will stop from Q1 onwards reporting further on that cluster. There's only a small part which you see still left, that is in fact maleic anhydride product 3, that is in fact the only thing which is there up for sale. And that small part, and we are done. As you have seen in the previous period, you all know all those press releases on the left side, all the divestments we did. In hindsight, we are very proud of it to have been able to achieve that. I remember our discussions when we announced this in 2007. And we needed a year to almost prepare ourselves because many of those assets were integrated assets in our Geleen facilities in the south of the Netherlands. And then, you know, all what happened in the second half of 2008 when we were ready for selling. Nevertheless, we sold it. An EBITDA of that moment close to 200 or approaching 200. I think if you add it all up, you come above 1.2 billion, which we cashed for it. So I think we did a good job there. And you see on the right side the acquisitions, some of the joint ventures we did, biomedical materials, PGG, some smaller ones in Pentapharm, etc., and the joint ventures. I come back on a few of those. Indeed, this is last time looking back to 2010, and we feel also it's our responsibility to report back on what did we achieve in that whole period, and the targets set in 2005 revised in 2007 and further increased. We remember in 2005 when we formulated 2010 target, we had a sales target of 3 to 5% sales growth. We ramped it up to 5%. Last year was 19, but if you take the average over the period, we achieved this 5% sales growth. Of course, nutrition profitability above target, pharma clearly below target. Performance materials recovering from the crisis improved in 2010, but not yet on the target. Polymer intermediate clearly above, although over the cycle, if you take 2008 and 9, where it was hit, it is below. Growth and innovation surpassed, China surpassed, CFRI surpassed, sustainability surpassed, and total shareholders return peer group. You need to look also carefully who's in the peer group there, but slightly below. So that is in fact a reporting back of achieved, and most of the targets were achieved. If you would have asked me that in the last part of 2008, 2009, would you be able to report in 2010 most of the targets achieved? I said that would be great if I could say that, but it is true. Exactly the new brand, we will hear during the dinner what you thought about the movie and all that stuff and about the brand. Once again, it's not about the brand, the flag and the logo only. It stands for something. It stands for our people and our commitment. You are, well, that's not fair to say to you. I wanted to say maybe you're less interested in how we manage exactly the company. That's a debate I and figured a few times with you in the recent period, showing you a little bit what we did with culture change, etc., in the company. And I think increasingly I see some of you are interested in how we do that. I found it important, and I only wanted to convey the message to you. It is unbelievable if you see the energy at this moment in the company to deliver towards our targets. It's really a full motivated crew. And that is not unimportant at all in a company. The strategy, what we made clear externally, internally, we're done with the divestments. I mean, always small divestments can be done, etc., but no bigger steps. We will now grow the company. Four growth drivers, you all know that. high-growth economies. To come back on that, innovation, sustainability, acquisition, partnership, and you know where we are geared at. The targets. Targets as formulated in September, and I'm glad the way we set the targets. 2015 is in principle the period we look towards. However, the financial targets also to put this pressure internally, externally in the company. Hey guys, we now go on the growth track and we need to deliver not only on the long term, also on the medium long term. 2013 profitability targets, and we believe we are on track on achieving it. And I come back on that. Organic sales growth as an average over the years, and that means roughly around 5 to 7% annually. Further doubling in China. If we succeed on our plans, China will be 3 billion in 2015. High growth economies, innovation. I come back on a few. I'm sure this calculation has been made by you, but we help you a little bit by it. You could make it, it's interesting to see, will we achieve and how will we achieve this 2013 target? Is that just a target we put in? How realistic is that? And how we will achieve that? You see here, if we take a little bit with our starting point in 2010, and if you calculate a nutrition growth, which is 2% above GDP, if you take a performance materials growth of 2x GDP, and that's what we set in September, and if you take a margin range in nutrition, as we took from 20-23%, 17% in performance materials, and if you calculate that, if you calculate moving into the brackets for 15-20% in pharma, but maybe profit improvement, less growth on that one, and if you take polymer intermediates, especially growing after 2013, because we are building the second line, and that will come on stream after 2013, so most of the growth will happen in 2014 and onwards. And emerging business areas take their conservative figure that is not contributing towards 2013 too much in the EBIT line. You come to these kind of calculations and you can calculate with a little bit rough numbers, including some acquisitions like we put in the MarTech, that the 1.4-1.6 EBITDA range in 2013 is absolutely into reach. Now, one step further, as we discussed also in September, yeah, true, but at what kind of returns? Now, this is on this second slide. First, if you take here the EBIT level in 2010, what was it? Roughly 750 million. And if you calculate, indeed, you can ramp up 250 to 350, 400 million, whatever it is, from the EBIT. EBIT increase, if you take the EBIT increase as the main increase for the EBITDA increase from 1.15 to 1.5 in 2013, and if you calculate that increase mainly back to EBIT, then you have roughly 25-50% EBIT growth, partly from sales, partly from margins without acquisitions. Okay, that's the EBIT range, but then on the right side, what does it do with the capital employed? Here you see the capital employed of today. You deduct of that the depreciation we have. You add to that the capital expenditures, as we have indicated in September, and also for 2011, we will be in that bracket. You add a little bit the OEC due to growth around the target we have set. You see that the increase which we have in the capital employed is, of course, substantially less than the increase we have in the EBIT of continued operation. And if you then calculate that we have already today an ROCE above 15%, then this growth, which we predict from 1.15 EBITDA today to a bracket of 1.4, 1.6 in 2013, is one, into reach, first slide, and secondly, into reach within an ROCE around 15%. Even if you calculate this, you come about the ROCE above 15%, quite a bit even. But it could be that some of the growth further on the higher range of the bracket will be done via acquisitions. So we don't know what the ROCE exactly of the acquisitions will be. But if you calculate it all on, then you say, hey, guys, one, the EBITDA level of 2013, and secondly, the ROCE figure going together with it, I think is absolutely into reach, and that is what we try to further calculate with you here. Sustainability targets also there, and as we have communicated in September. Now, then the four growth drivers, and already we announced this in September, and you know that since September a lot has happened. Once again, I stress maybe a little bit too much, but I get that feedback during dinner when you find that what I stress too much. But we really did something in the company of making clear about the change of the company and the change of strategy. So that was on the top management conference we had in September in Shanghai, a very, very important topic with the top 400. Again, those days. And we were glad, we pushed to that quite a bit also, to make known to the world in December a couple of transactions which we could already finalize. Hey guys, it's now all about implementation, direction set. Now, high growth economies, come back to China in particular, but if I look to some of the other deals we did, with engineering plastics, fiber intermediates into Russia, with Kubishev Azot, also with in Russia with nutrition in Tatarstan, further expansion into premix in India with Chemrock, all announced in the recent period. October 1, we finalized this whole stuff, and if I take the period November, December, January, in fact we talk about those 3 months, you see a lot of press releases we had out of growing there. And the emerging economies, we call it high growth economies because we have difficulties calling China second economy of the world an emerging economy. We think it's a high growth economy, it's growing with 10% per year, but it's already pretty big. And we are moving towards this 50%. So our, if it moves to that direction, and that's what we focus on, 2015, half of the sales of DSM will come from those kind of economies. China. Essential for us, we said many times, that we have a deal in China in our antibiotics business. Consumption is there, manufacturing is there. China plays a crucial role in the world. Now, we were happy that we could announce the deal with Sinochem. It's the largest chemical company in China. It's also active in pharmaceuticals, though not more into distribution. Some of the other pharmaceuticals, though not in antibiotics. At this moment, it's not an MOU that we signed, we also made that clear. It's the final deal which we signed with Sinochem, and we are awaiting approvals at this moment from the FTC, European Commission, and the Chinese authorities. And at this moment, it looks we are on track of that one and in those approval procedures. That's one thing, but also further expansion into R&D and innovation. We believe China is changing at this moment, not only low-cost manufacturing, but also more towards innovation. We are increasing our number of research people there. It is astonishing. Some people use the word scary, but use the word astonishing. How many patents China is issuing in the last couple of years, especially last 2 years. As a country, the different Chinese companies. Also at the European Patent Office to take one, I mentioned maybe some of you before, and since a couple of years, China is issuing more patents in green biotechnology at the European Patent Office than all European countries together. I think patent infringement soon in China will be history in the own interest of China. So we want to join that also. Also, we set up this innovation center. We are working that out right now as we speak, moving people to China, developing that, because we feel also with 3 billion consumers further developing in Asia, we get also, we get same needs and increased demand as we have in the West, but we get also new demands, things, demands Asian people have that the people here historically did not have. And those kind of things we also wants to participate, and then here in the West the light goes out, and we all move to China. Yeah, okay, good. Mark is taking action on that one, but my presentation still works. studies on China, on innovation. You know the reporting, and here's the official figures then, which we report today about the previous period. We surpassed quite a bit the target which we have set for 2010. The new definition of innovation is a little bit sharper. It's exactly only the products we introduced in the last 5 years. In 2015, 20% of the sales needs to come from products we just introduced in the last couple of years. So we're ramping that up for the coming period. Important in innovation is also, Wolf Dieter mentioned that, the different way of reporting of the innovation, more visible to you, also what we do with emerging business areas, also how much money we invest in that field. So you get a different flavor, I think, about the profitability of DSM, because the profitability of DSM is, of course, partly the profitability of the business itself, and then the additional investments we put in new growth platforms. So you will get a higher transparency on that one. We will focus especially on three of those areas, as you've seen before, the biomedical, the biotechnology, and what we call advanced services. And we will focus less on reposition, if I may use that word, specialty packaging and personalized nutrition. In other words, specialty packaging, personalized nutrition maybe did not deliver exactly what we expected or hoped for that. And then we said also that's all in the game, also in innovation, then maybe reposition that, maybe part will be sold or positioned different in the company or stop on spending money on that. Biotech, bio products and solutions, of course, two fields, biochemicals, succinic acid, those kind of stuff, and biofuels, second generation, that is the two focus areas there, biomedical materials, there the joint venture with DuPont, is one addition to that one. And the third one, advanced services, amongst others, the things we do with coatings for solar cells. Then the next topic, sustainability. Indeed, if you see the movie, you think sustainability is an important theme for DSM. It is, obviously, but not only as it was in the past, maybe as a value, as a responsibility, as a thing which is close to our heart. Increasingly, in fact, it is today, it is our business. What we do is providing sustainability to our customers, whether it is in food, light goes on in the West, whether it is in food or whether it is in materials, we provide to our customers sustainability. Now, here you see in the text also, I won't go too much in detail, some of the things we already achieved in the previous period. Acquisitions and partnerships, you know about our balance sheet. You know we are strong in terms of our cash position. We will use it for acquisitions. Martech is an acquisition which really fit into that. What is it? Roughly 800 million, a little bit below if you calculate it in euros. That size of company, 8x EBITDA, a company which has grown more than 10% in the previous period. Nice EBITDA margin, provides us to come in a position of infant formula. It provides us the possibility to sell their products also outside the US in other geographical areas of the world. So those type of acquisitions, I think, fit very well with us. You know about some acquisitions sometimes we don't do. I don't go too much in detail on that, but we have announced in January that there are also acquisitions we don't do. And you know out of our shareholding that we must have had strategic interest in some acquisitions because we do not invest in companies only for financial reasons. But we have stringent constrictions also. Talk here, of course, about our share in Danisco. But we have also strict requirements of the returns of our acquisitions, and we stick to that. Another acquisition we did is AGI in Taiwan, important for our resins business. UV will be an important new technology. We took 51% of that company. recently, and it's again an addition to the company. Another one in polyethylene, performance materials fibers in China, which we just announced also, strengthening again our fiber position also in China. Well, MedTech, I already mentioned, you know the rationale about that, you know why we bought it. It will be finalized, I understood, this Friday, Rolf Dieter, and most likely on Friday we will send out press release that we own the company. That is relatively fast. We announced it in the second half of December, and still in February owning the company. Tender offer went very well. More than 90%, and therefore we can expedite the acquisitions. And on Friday, on Monday, people from us are there at all sites of MedTech, six in total, and we'll communicate what DSM is, what we'll do. The whole integration team is ready. We communicated that already with the MedTech people, what we'll do, different work streams, etc., and we kick off on that on Friday. One of the interesting things, got some questions about that, is the sidetrack of MedTech is, of course, they have based their technology in infant formula based on algae technology. It's already for a couple of years that we have a discussion in the company whether that technology platform should not be added, especially for our biofuels ambitions. we were doubting a little bit, yes, should we develop that our own or acquire only for that purpose? Might add, but... Only for that purpose, we found it also a little bit risky. This is a very nice addition. It was not the purpose of acquiring MedTech, but it's very nice that we add that algae platform and their collaboration with BP on this one. And also, next week, we will further in-depth discuss that with the guys of MedTech. EPS accretive, day one, and all the financials. And the next slide, I think we communicated that over the previous period. The partnership with Sinochem, I already mentioned, don't need to go too much in detail on that one. You see also there, it will be treated according to IFRS as a proportionate share, so 50% will count in our accounts from the moment of the finalization and the closing of the acquisition. The AGI acquisition, I already mentioned, very important, adding a new technology, especially for our resins business, important, and the other one in China for our fiber business. And the last one, a couple of steps we did in the recent period in Russia. So if I take the different growth drivers, high growth economies, you see what we have done in the recent months. If to say also, you have met maybe over the years a few of those. I'm sure that our president in China is known to you, but maybe less known to you is the president we appointed in the course of last year in Brazil for Latin America and in India, Rajiv Chopra. All the local presidents are local people from those countries. In most cases, they stayed for a certain period at our headquarters with us. Like Wei Ming did, so getting him acquainted with us. They know DSM very well, understand our goals, and can stimulate further the growth of our businesses in those different markets. Very, very important for us. Also, don't bother you with our organizational concept, but I think it played a very important role in further speeding up this growth in those countries, and there's a tremendous amount of opportunities in those countries. It's still different to wake up in the morning and to or in the weekend maybe, and on Saturday being on the soccer field or field hockey and discuss with colleagues and friends and saying, well, markets are growing with 2%. I mean, in those markets, you discuss in the weekend, I mean, what is your market growing? With 10%? Bad for you. I mean, it's a different feeling, and we feel it with all our local presidents. They are in a different mode, like, hey guys, the world in and our countries is growing like hell. In innovation, different name of the game, especially also the emerging business areas, which we need to further boost now, sustainability, and of course the acquisitions which I talked about. The outlook, nutrition is expected to sustain good performance over the year. And of course, also this morning, we discussed a little bit pricing of nutrition. And I know, of course, especially in this community, pricing of nutrition is very much debated and discussed topic. And a few percent price decrease or increase, what is happening. If you see the prices, especially also of the spot market, and here and there, also our prices over the couple of years, of course, there were always a few percent, but the spot prices have moved up and down over the years. Sometimes we stand 20, 30% up and down. And if you've seen how we repositioned ourselves for the last 4 or 5 years and have seen our growth, I think that that we have a strong position in nutrition, and I have not any different signs on that one. It has to be said that we need to work very hard to compensate for our cost increase in nutrition, a relative cost increase, of course, due to the strength of the Swiss franc. That is a fact. I mean, we have two big factories in Switzerland, one in Leuven and one in Switzerland. It's a fact. And the other thing is that we have our nutrition R&D center with hundreds of people in Switzerland, in Basel, Kaiserslautern, and our global headquarters of nutrition also there. So we have quite a lot of people in Switzerland. We cannot move them out overnight because the Swiss franc is becoming stronger. I don't know what will happen with Swiss franc. I know from my Swiss colleagues that a lot of debate is there. I don't need to see. And otherwise, of course, we need to address it via different means. But the nutrition business itself, strong business, and expected to achieve sustained good performance. Business conditions in pharma similar as 2010. We know it is, of course, we need to do better in the operations, et cetera, et cetera. But it's not that. It is the things which we did with anti-infectors, with Sinochem, we need to do also for our DPP business. And most likely that will be in Asia also, in India or in China. And Stefan Tander said this morning, maybe India a little bit more likely than China. Could be. I'm still open in all kinds of directions in the countries, but indeed we look in bowls. And at a certain moment you can expect also we come with announcements there. And we need to have a stronger position also in generics in pharma, knowing that the full dependency we have now from custom manufacturing, at the end of the day, which will continue, the whole outsourcing trend will continue, no doubt on that, but that all kind of intermediate issues between some mergers, FDA approval going down, cost reductions in the pharmaceutical sector, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So therefore, we cannot be only dependent on that one. And the growth in the pharmaceutical area is especially into the generics, especially into the emerging economies. It's interesting to see, by the way, if you see the sales of people like Glaxo and Pfizer, AstraZeneca, in the emerging economies of those branded companies, you see that they sell mainly in the emerging economies generics. It's an eye-opener of many people who do not realize that a large part of Glaxo, Pfizer's business, etc., in those countries is generics and not branded products. So we need also to be stronger in that field. Performance materials expected to benefit significantly from the continued global growth. That means improvement 2011 compared with 2010. Polymer intermediates is, of course, excellent performance, and we expect that to continue. We're building the second line. There are no other lines in preparation at this moment. The only one announced, which is happening and further contributing after 2013, is ours. So I think caprolactam also towards the future has a very strong position. And the Netherlands, we did a couple of things in the last period. We didn't announce separate press releases of that globally, although in the Netherlands we did, and I'm sure not all of you have seen that. We made a collective labor agreement for the next 18 months, I think a favorable one. But more important, we changed our defined benefit plan to a defined contribution plan. And that means that for the coming period, we have a fixed contribution, same as last year, cash-wise, to our pension plan, to our pension fund. So not any risk and financial risk for us in the coming years. And after that period, we have no obligations. So it depends on further negotiations what happens. So the risks for us are none over there. There is, however, an accounting effect because switching from a defined benefit to a collective defined contribution plan means, in terms of IFRS, a different way of calculating, especially the assets, and that has a 33 million negative impact on our EBITDA 2010 towards 2011. It's, of course, non-cash item, but it has an impact on our EBIT and EBITDA. Due to the further internationalization we discussed this morning, also in geographical spread of our business and where we make our profits, etc., and some negotiations, we could reduce our tax rate quite a bit, because without that reduction, we would, of course, move up from 24 to whatever, because MarTech in the US, 40%, would increase our tax rate. Now, including MarTech, we decrease it to 21. So I think that's a substantial reduction which we announced here. 2011, another strong year for DSM. Two words, and that is more important than exactly to look to all quarterly results. And I know all of you want to know the next quarter, the next 3 months. Well, forget the next quarter, Sibisma. How is the trading update about January? I know that, and I understand that also. But important is we have a financial target, not far away, not 2020, 2015, 2013. That is our target we have set to the world. Missed the calculations, I wanted to tell you. And of course, we know our internal figures, which we have extensively discussed with our business people in the last couple of months. Are we on track of achieving our 2013 goals? And we are on track, fully on track, on achieving our 2013 goals. So we feel comfortable moving in that direction. Now, and here I think is almost everything I just said, so I don't need to repeat that. Thank you. Questions? Oh.
Okay, thank you. Four questions, please. First of all, if I can go back to the slide with innovation. There was a significant jump in sales from innovation year on year. Is that only due to the reporting?
What do you mean only due to the reporting?
Well, you said that you've changed the reporting. No.
This jump is according to the old reporting, so there's nothing to do with any new reporting. In 2005, we formulated the innovation sales a little bit in a complicated way. Products introduced in the last 5 years, products with full patent protection introduced in the last 10 years, etc., etc. Now, we shared in 2005 those definitions. And according to those definitions, which was zero at that moment, we said we should have 1 billion in 2010. Now, at the end, we ended up at 2010 in 1.3, exactly according to that definition. Since that definition, although we think it's a fair definition, but it's a little bit outside industry standard, we simplify it. We said products introduced last 5 years. We calculate from now on as innovation sales. So we put the ticker again at zero, and we start from there. We say, where are we today? What is introduced in the last 5 years? That's around, 11-12%. Last year, and we want to move that up at least towards 20%. And that reporting will start from Q1, I guess.
No, probably not quarterly.
Okay.
Because the sales from innovation jumps from 810 million to close to 1.3 billion, so that's quite a significant increase.
In the last year, yes. It was quite an increase, more than we maybe would have expected, not hope, but expected, yes. And especially in materials, I have to say, especially in engineering plastics, where of course we had some discussions about passing on raw material costs, etc. However, our market position there is very strong, and one of the things we got really rewarded in resins and engineering plastics by our customers is that we remained fully committed on innovation during the crisis, and
for some of our customers, especially automotive industry, we had a very, very tough time. That's very important. So I think that, although you don't see it exactly in our maybe today's profit figures, but you see it in the innovation figures here, the appreciation and the strengthening of our market position was very good in the last period.
And then going to slide 25, if I look at your EBIT target that you have for 2015, it seems that you're targeting an increase between 25% and 50%. And it says on that slide, it says own strength excluding acquisitions.
Yeah.
Now, if I take the low point of that, the 25%, and add it to the EBITDA, we arrive at 1.45 billion in 2013. While your target includes, if I'm not mistaken, acquisitions. So does it mean that including acquisitions, you're actually targeting something above 1.6 billion or so?
No. This is, we use here, it's just an illustrative chart. We use here EBIT because the ROCE definition we use is EBIT divided by average capital employed. The EBITDA, we start with 1160 roughly. But the EBIT is about 760, so 25% on that only gives us roughly 200 million, so it gives us something like 1.35 only, not the 1.45. So you have to be careful now with EBIT and EBITDA. It's just illustrative. The only point the slide wants to make is, say, if we achieve our target somewhere between 1.4 and 1.6, then we need a significant EBIT improvement, much more than what we have announced as CapEx, and as a consequence, of course, then capital employed increase. So there will be is a clear gap between the increase in capital employed and the increase in EBIT, which means from today's ROCE, which is already close to 15%, we should grow significantly above the 15 if we did not make acquisitions. Now, that only says what I said in September. The two targets keep each other a little bit in balance, because there was a bit critique also. You can easily make the 1.6. You have so much cash, just buy it. But if you buy it, because the acquisitions alone, the individual ones, typically will hurt return on capital employed, because your capital employed goes up because you have a lot of goodwill, which you also buy. So the consequence is that what we say here is this mix gives us cushion for acquisitions and still achieve the over 15% return on capital employed.
Okay, thank you. Final question on your option program. Can you remind me what the requirement in terms of number of shares is for that option program? How much shares do you need to cover that?
It's not a fixed requirement, because the requirement is also based on the question on what the share price does, because the share price determines based on certain methodologies. Mm-hmm. What is in the money or out of the money. That's why also there was less option hedging needed in the course of the crisis. In addition, we were also a bit more cautious because of cash, especially in the very bad period, say from October to 2008 to the first half 2009. And now with the strong appreciation of the share price, a lot of more of our stock option programs are in the money, and we saw that already. The exercising was enormous. Last year we had a cash inflow in our cash flow, it's part of our cash flow, a cash inflow from exercising of options of people of DSM of almost 100 million euro cash inflow because of exercising our stock options. And our hedge position in Treasury has melted away like the snow tomorrow, I hope, or the snow at least in January or after Christmas, because of this heavy, heavy exercising. And now we have to build a new position of hedging because more of the programs of the past are in the money, and we need to cover that.
Because that was actually the point I was getting at. The Treasury shares at the end of 2009 were roughly 18 million or so.
Yeah.
So that has decreased. Can you update how much that amount was, and then we'll add the 5 million?
Yeah. Of the 18 million, roughly 13.5 million were based on the share buybacks we did in 2007 and 2008 on a tax-free basis. We do not use those for our stock options, because then we also have to reclassify them. We will use them, but in small chunks, for the optional stock dividend. So for those shareholders who will opt for the stock dividend, we will use some shares needed out of the share buybacks of 2007 and 2008. We had at the beginning, we had roughly 5 million, 4.5 million or so, which has gone below 1 million now in shares available for exercising of options. And that's why we have to build up that hedge position again. The choice between the two, you could ask, why don't you just use the bought back shares years ago and make new buybacks? Because hedging of stock options in principle is tax-free if you buy shares in the Netherlands. While when we go to the option stock dividend, as we announced in September, a new share buyback program for the next couple of years will not be tax-free. Why the usage of those shares for the option stock dividend, again, is easy. So you have to balance it with the tax approach, and that's why it makes much more sense now to build up the hedge position again and keep the share buyback, the shares from the share buyback programs kind of separate.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, Tony Barker from Nomura. I have, I'll keep it to three questions. First of all, I just want to clarify this innovation slide that we were talking about on the last question. I'm very clear that the slide there is the old definition, innovation sales. But in terms of the
numbers... Page 29 you're talking about.
Sorry, page 29, yeah. In right. terms of the numbers we're going to see tomorrow... Are you saying that the sales that we will see tomorrow will be the sales of products introduced in the last 5 years? Is that what you're saying? So, because I had right,
no,
okay.
No.
So,
wait a second.
That's not what I had imagined we were going to see.
No.
I'd imagined we were going to see biomedical and maybe one or two
other
euros here
also.
And there.
The sales, the 1.3 billion, close to 1.3 billion sales, is on the old definition. It comes from nutrition. Performance materials from pharma even, and also, of course, from biomedical and the innovation areas. So they are in the various clusters based on the definition, which Feike
exactly.
just repeated, of 2005. Now, in the innovation cluster, the sales will only be the sales which are coming out of the innovation, the business which is run, basically, you could say, by Rob van Leen, which is the EBAS and the incubator and that stuff.
Thank
so
you.
That is a much smaller number, but it is in the 1.3 also included.
Yes, no, that's my understanding, but I just wanted to clarify that. Okay, the 8% volume growth in quarter four in polymer intermediates, I'm surprised no one's already asked about stock building. I mean, presumably some of this must have been people buying this commodity product in anticipation of further price rises at the beginning of the year. Can you... I mean, I know these things are very, very hard in practice to identify. Can you make any comments at all about your view on that?
Well, I guess, I mean, if I may start and maybe you want to add, I guess there might have been some pre-buying. If I look at what I see in trading now in January, it just continued. So there was nothing visible that now it goes down in that sense. So we are still selling our full capacity.
Now, everybody knows, of course, everybody sees the raw material prices increases, so you can expect the, which keeping the margins and the market is very tight. I mean, the general global utilization rates are very high at this moment, and there's not any sign that that will change, because there's not any new product, not any new capacity coming on stream, and the demand in China is very, very solid. And that's the main, it's all over the world, but China is a very important driver. So if you say, I don't know what you say about pre-buying, of course people see this movement of raw material and prices, but if you would call it, I'm now putting your words in your mouth, but if you would call it stocking or those kind of things, or restocking or additional stocking or whatever, that I would doubt, because indeed if I see how the year started, then I would have expected absolutely a slowdown in the beginning of this year due to that effect. And I don't see that. And I think the demand is pretty, pretty solid of polymer intermediates.
Thank you. And the final question, slide on page 24. Polymer intermediates, based on the very, very, you know, as you said, the astounding result this year, I understand that that thin line there is effectively a zero, being probably some kind of fallback into the real world in this year, but then some growth once the new line comes on 2014. Now, the emerging business areas is exactly the same width. So do I read this that between 2010, oh sorry, it's 2013 or 15, that do I read this to mean that the emerging business areas result, when we see it, will basically stay the same over this period?
Now, basically, what we wanted to do here is to help a little bit on the interpretation of the targets. You could have run a similar exercise with all the numbers we provided in September. It's a 2013 view, so it does not include the second line of caprolactam in Nanjing, because that is after 2013. And that's why the polymer intermediates is a minor addition, because we have such a high result at the moment that we have difficulties to believe that this will grow significantly with the current capacity. And the innovation clusters or the EBAS should add something over the period, but it's a very short period. The basic message here is the main contribution for the coming 3 years will be nutrition and performance materials. Even with pharma improvements, even with partnerships, Sinochem, the size of pharma on a total profitability increase for the company from where we are now, 1.15 to 1.4 to 1.6, is relatively small, even if we are clearly on track to our target margin for 2015. That contribution also, especially including the 50% deconsolidation after partnership, if it's a 50-50 joint venture like in the case of Sinochem, that will be rather minimal. So the main contribution, that's the key message here, the main contribution towards the 2013 EBITDA targets must be nutrition and performance materials.
You can say it also with different words. With performance materials and nutrition, we show here also we can achieve those targets. I mean, of course, if there's an upside on the EBAS in that period, even here it is not calculated with that.
A couple of questions. First one, could you maybe update us on the whole biofuels technology? You made some interesting press release in the summer of 2010 on that. How is the interest evolving? Are there any sure. more concrete projects coming on? Or?
Okay. Indeed, we were discussing it shortly already in the break, and we'll maybe come back this evening. On the biofuels, and you know, our focus is on second generation. That's different than in biochemicals, where we believe we will also work on first generation. And we think first generation is not an issue. At the end of the day, for biofuels, it is an issue. Once again, to refresh your mind, into biochemicals, if you take biosuccinic acid, etc., the amount of feedstock which you use in the world is relatively, although it's a big market, the chemical industry, but the food market too, is relatively that small that you talk about one or a few percentage of total food and crop consumption which you use for switching chemicals like biosuccinic acid to biochemicals. And we think that therefore the argument of the chemical industry influencing the food industry, which is the main argument used also to switch to second generation and put fuel, put food in your tank and all those kind of statements made by the food industry, do not count for chemicals because it's a minor impact in total volumes in the total food industry. That's different if we talk about the volumes for fuels. If I take last year, 30% of the corn used in the United States was used for biofuels, first generation. Now, 30 means that, and I don't want to touch this very sensitive debate which is there between the food and the chemical industry, where the food industry is saying, well, this is really driving up food prices, this whole biofuel thing, and creating poverty for a lot of people in the world. That is the argument of the food industry, and 30% of the corn industry, it is one thing I cannot debate, that's a substantial part, and people say, and that has a substantial influence on prices. I don't know, but I can imagine that the 30% demand has a substantial influence on prices, correct. So therefore, for fuels, we work on second generation. Now, as I said, we have the enzyme technology developed, and we have the yeast technology developed. At the end of the day, you need a couple of things. You need the collection of the materials, by the way, then you need to decide where you want to start your second generation biofuels. If you do it in Brazil, you need to work with sugarcane bagasse. If you do it in the US, most likely you do it from corn. If you do it in Europe, you start about sugar beet, or you take wheat or other things, and again, different in Asia. And I think, by the way, US and Brazil have the highest short-term chances, but they start with different raw materials. We do have a multi-pass development because we don't know exactly where it will end up in the world, so you need to work with different feedstocks. That is one, because you get cellulosic rich material, because second generation use the waste in the different parts of the world, depending on where you start with. Then you need the pre-treatment, the crunching, but also other pre-treatment technologies, which are now heavily in development, and are specialized companies also in this this pre-treatment. And then you need the treatment with your enzymes, etc. And then, most likely, out of cellulosic, you get C5, C6 sugars to convert into ethanol. C6 sugars are much easier than C5 sugars. Of course, you can buy microorganisms who can do so, but most have a low yield because C5 sugars is difficult to digest and to convert into ethanol. And I believe you cannot really get an economical process without the technology because you have a low yield. Now, we said we have that technology, announced that in the summer. Then afterwards, you need to be able to, I think, do an economical process to recover some of the side streams you get out of your whole operation without going into detail. But like a refinery, an oil refinery, you get all kinds of side streams which you need to recover in order to have a full economic process. And at the end of the day, you have your distribution towards the oil companies, let's say, of the world. I think at the end of the day, you will see consortia happening in the world to set this up. If you want to set up a biorefinery of a little bit bigger size, at least you start with 200 million, but I think half a billion is what you need to invest for a bigger size. Our idea is that we participate in a consortium of companies, that we provide some of the technologies, maybe we build our own installations on that site for the part that we are responsible for, and participate in a bigger setup. And we can replicate that once we have proven that once. At this moment, there are a lot of talks, I think, in the industry, and a tremendous delay in the crisis, in who wants to collaborate with you and what kind of collaborations and partnerships will be set up. I would not be amazed if the partnerships consist about more than two parties per partnership. It's already difficult sometimes to collaborate alone, but for sure with two others. And that is a time delay. And I think that is what we are doing also at this moment. We're doing two things at the same moment. We're ramping up our technology yield-wise, both in the enzymes and the yeast. And secondly, we are in talks with other parties and to see what kind of collaborations we can set up. And I think at a certain moment, you will get from us, and maybe also from others, announcements of collaborations. And we need to see which are the winning concepts and winning partnerships. I don't want to, I want to influence you. is that I would look carefully to whether those partnerships cover all the different elements which are important. And it starts with where the raw materials are coming from, how the pre-treatment is being done, then the technology of the enzymes and the microorganisms, and then the distribution. And all steps are very important. And I know I don't want to say anything ugly about partnerships already in there in development or announced, but the question is, do they cover the right different, the right elements of that value chain? Because this is the value chain which you need to build at the end of the day. I don't know whether that answered that question.
Yeah, very clear. And I can, another question if I can. On Martic, when you announced the acquisition, you indicated it's mostly about growth. There were not that much cost synergy potentials. Now that you have probably been there with the full teams, etc., looking more into detail in the company, is that still very much the case, or are there any cost synergy potential coming?
There are cost synergy potentials since Hans is here, I mean, they have an investment relation department, but they don't need it anymore because we have Hans. So there are more, of course, activities which they, as a full-fledged company, do not need in our setup. Also in the factories, of course, we know something about fermentation. They have fermentation facilities in Kingstree in Carolina, and we know something about that one also, etc. Of course, there are cost synergies. The reason why we said that is that it's not a company like we bought for the cost synergies. It's not that we go in with everything and said, well, the synergy comes from getting cost out. The most important synergy is that we try to put some of our products in their strong position in infant formula, that's one. And the other thing is bring their products globally into other areas in the world, in infant formula, where we are stronger, where they are not so strong, and also in other applications in beverage, etc. So that sales synergy growth is the reason and is the name of the game. Don't forget, every cost synergy which we see, everything which we see, we will take a pick.
James Light from Barclays Capital. I've got a couple of questions, but firstly, returning to Jenny's theme on pre-buying, but thinking about performance materials, I think you made reference this morning to, I think the word was extraordinary demand in some areas, maybe I misheard that, but do you think there's a potential you'll see any stocking effect in the first quarter, particularly thinking about where the oil price is today, with customers rationally expecting higher prices in the future?
We don't see it today, but I mean, I don't have a crystal ball. I mean, theoretically, of course, you're right. If the prices, and everybody would expect that the price continued to go up significantly, which is an expectation you can have or you cannot have, then that could be a logical consequence. But at the moment, we don't see it. So now we don't know how, for example, the political situation in the African, North African and Middle East countries continues, because that is partly driving the prices today. If it was only driven by demand, you would say the risk is lower. But maybe this, but on the other side, yeah, how will that continue? You can speculate and you can place a bet on that if you like. But to predict that is difficult, I think.
I personally also don't see it, although I fully understand the question. It's a logical question, though maybe it's not such a logical question. In the crisis, almost all industries, almost in the whole world, and especially all industries where we are involved in, reduced their operating working capital, all value chains. In the first, a little bit second half of 2009, but especially in the first half of 2010, we saw clearly restocking. People went too far in their destocking and restocked to a certain level in late 2009, but especially in 2010, first part. But still, you see it also with our company. Many companies have a lower OEC level and a lower stock level than before, and they want to maintain that level. So everybody is trying to manage their business sharper and used the crisis when they reduce it to hold that, and you see we did too. Now, if people now further, not restock, but further increase their stock and gamble with increasing their operating working capital and their stock level in terms of anticipating future price increase, it's a pure gamble. Because at this moment, some raw materials are going up with two effects. One effect is, I think, increased demand, India and China. And I'm personally a little bit less concerned about that reason for raw material increases. That's also the way we discuss internally. We said, raw material prices increased due to increased demand in India and China for gasoline or whatever. I guess part of the gasoline they need for running their cars, then they need cars also, then they buy cars with our materials, etc. So I'm not concerned about that. Because at the end, if the increased raw material prices are driven by demand increase in economies, that will help us at the end of the day also. We will be able to pass it on. The other effect, which in the last couple of weeks since January, December is there, is the whole situation in Northern Africa and Middle East, which is speculation and unrest and uncertainty. Yeah, true, but that Therefore, I would doubt that people would gamble on that, because this is a strict gamble. Who knows what happens with Libya, etc. Now it increases, could decrease in a week from now again. So I don't know where that's going. This moment, don't see it.
Okay, very clear. There's one last question, which was, in terms of nutrition's cost base, could you help us make an educated guess about how much of that today is Swiss franc based?
I think it's difficult to say and to give an educated guess. I mean, we have, of course, the headquarter of nutrition and also the R&D basically in Switzerland. And we have two of them, the two main factories also in Switzerland. The other factories, as you know, are in Germany and France and the UK and the US and in China. So it is a significant part. An educated guess. I mean, I probably would have to guess myself at the moment, so I don't know whether the second guessing then brings you much further. But what you can see maybe as an indication directionally is if you look in the annual report, we have, of course, a segment reporting. In the segment reporting, a geographical segment reporting also is there. Because of the importance of Switzerland, you find Switzerland there specified. And there you find the sales by origin, which is basically what we produce in Switzerland. And you can maybe relate that to the total sales of nutrition as an indication directionally.
If you make that calculation, no, sorry.
Shall I look at my book? This was the theoretical answer. I can also look for the page if you like. But you can do that also as on the website. So it's in the annual report on page 120 or so, roughly speaking.
With the guidance of Rolf Dieter, you can make your own guess, I think.
Page 158.
Yeah, please.
Yevgeny Molotov, UBS. I have two questions on MarTech and two questions on performance materials, if I may. On MarTech, the adoption in US of omega-3 and omega-6 was largely driven by the FDA requirement. So it was legislatively driven that it was required to add these fatty acids into baby food. In Europe, no such requirements exist and no even guidance are given by any European healthcare authorities. So how do you see the penetration to the US market when there is no legislative drive?
Yeah. Okay. It's true what you say. In the US, the penetration rate in infant formula, not about other food applications, in infant formula is pretty high due to the elements you mentioned. And outside US, it's pretty low. Now, it is also true, it's always a sensitive debate, although this is financial world, no press, because you touch the issue of mother milk and breast milk, sorry. The compounds are clearly there into breast milk. I think they have a function clearly in breast milk. There's so much scientific evidence about that. What is the function of breast milk and brain development and development of the child, etc., after it's born? And that's the reason why the US did so. And you can argue, why should the rest of the world not copy that? Because the US is not doing this for fun. Recently, the EFSA and the European situation looked again to all different food products with health claims. And they made some remarks about some food products, I forgot which is what, which we are not in, that say, well, we doubt a little bit about the food claims, the health claims about that. And they made a specific remark, although no obligation, but a specific remark about omega-3, omega-6 fatty acid as an example of products with proven scientific health claims. And that is an important statement made by the EFSA itself, recognizing that this is not, for fun or debatable, but that the claim is there. Now, this is very recent, happened, I think, a few months or months before we did the acquisition. I don't know what the EFSA, of course, will do further. I cannot look into legislation. Of course, if European authorities or other authorities would put this as an obligation, like in the US, our market immediately would jump like hell.
But even without that, we believe that food companies and infant formula companies most likely will change the attitude, and this is at least a support for them to do so. Now, you see there is a penetration rate, but it could be higher. The other thing is Asia, which is very interesting, where there's a lot of interest for food companies, also after all the food scandals, to get the best food, especially infant formula. It's, of course, an extreme sensitive area. Yeah. If I talk about Asia, so we need to see. But a strong recommendation, at least, or not recommendation, a strong recognition from the EFSA is there. That's the status at this moment.
Thank you. And another question is, because there are competitive technology to what Martek was doing from algae, and I was just wondering if you know if there are any competitive technologies which are close to getting FDA approval in US for omega-3 and omega-6 for the baby food?
No, do I miss something?
I just don't know. And on performance materials, you said that in polymer intermediates, you already have quite high level of utilization, capacity utilization. I was just wondering, can you comment on capacity utilization volume upside for performance materials by business line? Do you see any volume growth and where and at which stages?
And we see for performance materials clearly volume growth, both in resins and in plastics during the year. We believe also that if we look to our operations, that we have room for growing into existing facilities, and if further needed, by debottlenecking existing facilities, but we have room for growing in existing facilities without investment. It's different for polymer intermediates, where we also there, by the way, we try to debottleneck, etc., to get more volumes out. But there we are much more to the capacity limitations, and therefore the second line in China, than in performance materials. I cannot go product by product, but products like Stanil, etc., we can grow and will grow again this year without any capacity investment.
And the last one is on...
It's a little bit coming back to the... I mean, it's a rough calculation that Rolf Dieter did, showing the growth of the company, starting with the sales growth, then the EBIT and EBITDA growth, and then the capital expenditure to see over the years. And that is, if you grow in existing facilities, Stanil, those kind of products, then of course it ramps up your ROC quite a bit. Sorry.
Yes, and the last one is about your margin target for performance materials. So this year it was 11.9%, and you want to reach above 17 in 2013.
15.
Okay, so how do you plan to get there? Because it's quite a big margin uplift.
Yeah.
Is it a product business mix that will change, or improve profitability of polyamide 6, or?
We have invested, I think, in the years before the crisis, or maybe in 2008, here and there, quite a bit in capacity in performance materials. I take products like Stanil, I take new products we've introduced in 4T, another new polymer which I've invented, etc. But also in resins, so there's absolutely room for growing into existing facilities. And that we need to do, and that, of course, would fast not only help the ROC, but also, of course, the return on sales. And the EBITDA margin, if you work in existing facilities. So the task we give a little bit to those businesses, also Dyneema, is to grow without too many capital expenditures. Yeah, and then if you achieve that, then you come to those kind of figures. Please.
Good afternoon, this is Sachin from Kempen. If I look at slide 5 and look at the core business, What do you think, if there is next crisis, say 2012, 2013, how less cyclical are you looking at this business profile? Because it looks like in 2008 or 9, the core business was still 50% cyclical.
Yeah. Sorry, it looks like?
The core business was still 50% cyclical. Because this, I assume, are the comparative figures. This was the core in 2008 also, if we go back. So if we are facing the same thing again, how less cyclical are you?
Yeah. I don't know where to start the answer. For me, cyclicality has especially something to do with, in our industry, with supply-driven cyclicality and not demand-driven cyclicality. That's my first remark. And the supply-driven cyclicality in nutrition, pharma, and performance materials is very, very limited. The supply-driven cyclicality in polymer intermediates is very high. However, I do not see a concern about that in the whatever years to come. No new capacity, high capacity utilization, no new projects announced. The only one is ourselves in China, etc., etc. So the supply-driven cyclicality, polymer intermediates, yes. The rest, none. None, very limited. Now, if you talk about demand-driven cyclicality, which is a different cyclicality, and I do not call that cyclicality, I call that the crisis, because normally in cycles in industry, the supply is happening, and people build new factories, and then you get those movements. If something happens in demand, I do not call that a real cyclicality, I call it a crisis. People stop buying, and that's more or less what happened. Yeah, if you get a crisis, obviously, performance materials, again, would be under pressure. The only products which never have a cyclicality, even pharmaceuticals can be under pressure. The only products which never have a demand-driven cyclicality, or very limited, is food. And because people die, if they don't stop massively with eating food, because then they die the next day and the crisis is over, at least in the perception. So food is the only market with that characteristics. All other products in life you can postpone buying. At least for a few days, or weeks, or months, because nothing happens. Food is the only one you need roughly daily. But I distinct quite a bit in our core business demand and supply-driven cyclicality. If I go back then the core business and the old business we had, if I look to our energy interest, if I look to elastomers, if I look to fertilizers, if I look to melamine, they all had also a high supply-driven cyclicality. All those businesses are gone. So I would say our company reduced the cyclicality dramatically. Is our company risk-free for crises in a severe reduction of demand? In nutrition, yes, in the rest, no. Because people can always stop buying things. Yeah, so if we get a second crisis soon, which I do not hope nor see, then we have in certain business again issues.
And my second question is regarding war chest. If I look at your net debt position, you can easily do two more MarTech kind of acquisition. Is it safe to assume that you would be focusing more on performance materials in that direction and not on nutrition anymore?
No. The first one, yes. The second one, no. Yes, we have more than 2 billion on cash. So if you say MarTech is a deal around 750-800 million euros, in cash, you can easily do another two MarTechs in terms of your cash position.
Even three.
Exactly. I wanted also to go that direction, but I'm support from the financial side. So we can do three. If you want to stretch further. But so, yes, we can. We do not have something in the company like we did one in nutrition and now we need to do one in performance materials. I don't want that. If the company comes completely out of balance, that we have an 80-20% situation in the company, yeah, then at a certain moment maybe you start some debates.
But when one part is 60 and the other part is 40 or 50-50 or 60-40 or 40-60 or 65, whatever, I don't mind about that one. I'm not saying I treat you all equal. You need to grow in sync with each other. I don't mind. The good proposals get rewarded, the other ones not. And speed has also a special reward.
Okay, thank you.
Jenny?
Yeah, can I just come back on the performance chemicals margin? You said this morning on a conference call that the unit margin had increased between the third and the fourth quarter. That's obviously reassuring. And you can conclude from that the reason why the EBITDA margin compressed was because volume was down between the third and the fourth quarter. So that's the operating leverage point that Fika was just talking about. But it did look to me like the degree with which the EBITDA margin was down was more than you would have expected in the face of a, I think you said, 6% volume decline. Given that you said the given that the unit margin had gone up. So was there something else going on which held the margin, which pushed the margin down, you know, more than I think one would have expected given the unit margin rise?
Yeah, I think one thing which I think is out of that discussion is of course the mix effect between the businesses. So you have Dyneema, you have engineering plastics, you have resins with quite different margin levels. And that mix effect is not explained by how you looked at the things on a kind of a high-level basis. And that is the difficulty or the additional dimension, I would say, which is in the game, of course.
As we look forward in the next couple of quarters, which the market seems to love to do, is there anything going on that you can identify within the mix which might make that situation worse or improve it, or should we just, you know, assume that all other, you know, the last quarter's outcome is the best estimate of this quarter's outcome?
Yeah, I think the volume should grow, clearly, because we always say that the fourth quarter, and we don't only say it, that's just a fact, that the fourth quarter is a seasonally lower quarter, so the volume should clearly grow in the first quarter, and that should be a big difference to the fourth quarter. Okay, there was one more question there.
So, Jürgen Reck from Macquarie Securities, two questions. The first one, can you elaborate a little bit on the performance of the Dyneema business? Because the other businesses, engineering plastics and resins, you mentioned it in the press release, somewhat positive. And second question is regarding the recent acquisition of Shandong ICD High Performance Fibers. You mentioned here that it's a complementary manufacturing and technology assets. What's the main strategic rationale behind this acquisition?
Maybe shall I say just one word to the first and then you to the strategy on Dyneema? I mean, what we publish is, you know, we don't publish Dyneema results nor any other results of business group level, but we do publish sales on an annual basis. So in the annual report, you see the sales development of Dyneema for the full year, not by quarter. And Dyneema sales grew from 222 million in 2009 to 288 million in 2010. In addition, we made one change. We didn't publish that separately because it's a minor change. As of 2010, we published the Dyneema Purity as part of the DSM Biomedical EBA, and not anymore as part of Dyneema. So there is even a slight negative effect, call it 10, 15 million or whatever, in that development. But even excluding that effect, there is an increase of about almost 30% in Dyneema sales last year.
Okay. The other one is, if you look to the fiber business, you have fibers made out of different raw materials. You have the carbon-based technology, you have the polyethylene-based technology, you have Kevlar, etc. So you have different type of starting point for the fibers. That's one.
And we have a position based on polyethylene in Dyneema. That's one. Secondly, what you use for that is the so-called ultra-high molecular weight polyethylene. That is the starting material for that one. Having that access to that material, you do not have Dyneema. That's a separate technology. However, there are companies around the world experimenting and developing ultra-high molecular weight polyethylene and trying to move into the fiber industry with that. And what we did now here is one of those companies in China who's doing that. We acquired them for several reasons. One reason is that is the way they approach this in a very cheap way. They do not, and they have a product which I do for completely, it's a fiber, but I would call it uncomparable with Dyneema in applications, in performance, etc. However, it is in that same industry, and they have a different technology how they manufacture it, cost-wise, etc. We found that very interesting. That's one reason for buying it. Second reason, we want to get a foothold on what is happening in this industry in China. That's the second reason. And the third reason, we want anyway to grow in China, also ourselves in terms of markets. So three reasons why we said at a certain moment, hey guys, wait a minute, we take in a position here. We do not want to wait to, let's say, grow this company further themselves. And then wait till this may be big, or whether we take in a position now, we get that technology, we know what's happening in that market, and we are sitting into that. That's maybe a way to explain our strategic step we made here.
Yeah. Last question.
Thanks a lot. It's a small one on pharma, and it's just in the purpose of modeling, because you said that the business conditions are expected to stay the same as in 2010, but then you have Shire contracts kicking in, so I was just trying to understand the sales growth related to that. How will I model 2011 for pharma? Thank you.
Yeah.
No, I don't think we can give an indication still, because we also don't want now to step by step here and there a question go into more detailed outlook statements. It anyway has one difficulty, the whole modeling, and that is much bigger than any discussion about Shire contracts and so on. Basically, the indication is we do not see a significant improvement in pharma this year. It's too early. And the second point is, and that is much more relevant at the end for modeling, is as soon as we announce the closing of the Sinochem anti-infectives deal, of course, half of the infectives result will be deconsolidated. That is has a much bigger relevance at the end than any of that. Yeah, but don't overrate the Shire contracts. I mean, we of course, this is one contract or a series of contracts we announced 2 years ago, but I find it also, maybe it was our mistake that we made too much noise about it, I find it overweighted in the discussion.
No, we said to them, we need a couple of those kind of deals to recover from it, and the market that mentioned every time the Shire contract, and we too, and we said a couple of those, and a couple of those is not repeating the same a few times, but there's a couple of those. And at the end of the day, we are in this moment, as you can imagine, working out how we can set up an alliance in a different way. And without going into detail that, but you know exactly our strategy, so you know maybe also at a certain moment what you can expect.
Okay. Thank you very much for your questions. I want to thank the people who followed this by an audio cast that they stayed with us, but we will close the audio cast now. Can we do that?